You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
For me, all I need is my credit card, and I need to be able to brush my teeth, and the odd sexy lady here and there, you know, every couple of days here and there, to be able to teach me about the ways of the particular city that I'm in.
Hence the need for the credit card.
Hooray!
My guest on The Dan Nichols Show this week is somebody I approach with a considerable degree of trepidation, not just because you never are entirely sure what's going to come next, but also because he might be the single noisiest human being I've ever met. And I have this on great personal authority, because Sivengezi, 5 years on from sitting next to you in a stadium in Japan, I can still hear one of my ears ringing slightly to the unending delight and 80-minute ball-by-ball commentary, to use a cricket term, that you very kindly gave an entire Tokyo Rugby Stadium at the Rugby World Cup. Welcome to the Dan Nichols Show.
I tell people all the time I love rugby, and sometimes I think I love rugby more than I love the Springboks. So if you see me watch quality rugby, you will hear me scream for the Springboks and the quality rugby. And we were watching All Blacks versus South Africa, which is the pinnacle battle between two incredible world-class teams. So you were getting me screaming for the Springboks, me screaming for personal friends, and me screaming for incredible rugby. It's good to see that.
Also, you being fundamentally dishonest to a large number of Japanese people, but we will come back to that a little later on in the show. I do want to stick with rugby, though, and go back to some of my earliest memories of our friendship. And it's a friendship I'm very grateful for, because you're a very loyal and dedicated person, and it's great to have you on your side. And as anybody who knows you on social media, you're not a great person to not have you on side. But I think some of our earliest encounters, we go back to the Cape Town Tens, and memories I absolutely loved were, here was Sivengezi, normally in a rugby jersey about three sizes too small, playing for a tennis-side rugby team and bellowing out threats and challenges to very large professional rugby players, normally about four times your size, and demanding they come and take you on. And I think that was when I first saw two things. One, the love of rugby that you have already mentioned, but also probably more self-belief, self-confidence than anybody I've come across on the outside. And I often wonder with people like that how much the outside refers to the inside. Do those match with Sivengezi?
I think it's a great question. I've never been asked that question like that before. I think for me, I think I'm great. I know I'm great. I've been told I'm great my entire life, and I'll continue to believe it. Do we have doubtful moments? Yes, we do. Do we have moments of imposter syndrome? Yes, we do. But do I wake up every morning, look myself in the mirror, and tell myself how incredible I am every single fucking day? Am I unapologetic about it? Yes, I am. Do I love seeing people living their full potential? Yes, I do. I don't see myself as better than anyone else. I love seeing people working at their best and fullest potential. And if I can have someone or just a kid see me doing what I do and go, oh, I want to be like that guy more. But if you looked at my biggest inspirations, it's Muhammad Ali, it's Nelson Mandela, it's people in your face and unapologetic about it. But do I believe in myself as much as I say I do? I think I believe in myself more in my heart than I do with my mouth.
Which is hard to conceive of, and yet I do actually believe that. I wonder if that's always been the case. Siv today versus little Siv, not necessarily 2 or 3 year old Siv, but young Siv. How much has that progressed?
I think my mother was just an incredible force of just telling me how great I am, and that with the great power comes great responsibility. I think when I was younger, I faked it more. I faked it to believe it. And I think, you know, I would say things not believing it, and then you have to fake it and you have to push through. I never forget once when I was younger, we were not well off. We were actually pretty poor, and it was raining, and I only had flops and board shorts. So I wore flops and board shorts at school, and everyone was like, what are you doing? I was like, no, this is what I feel like wearing. Did I feel like wearing it? No. But did I convince people that I loved wearing it? Yes, I did.
And that background, I think, contributes to this ridiculous work ethic. At least 7 times a day, you'll post something telling the world that they cannot work harder than you and nobody can outwork you. And that really, that sense of drive does seem to be the all-encompassing philosophy that you are going to snatch every last moment to make the most of it.
You know, if you could have asked me that before my mother died, I would have given you some cliche, weird answer. But as my mother, it's been a year and a half and a bit of her passing away, and I'm just looking for her approval. That's all I've ever looked for. You know what I mean? It's my mother's approval. And I think now that she's gone, it's just ramped it up a bit even more. I think it was always just working hard to send her that message, to tell her what I did. You know, that's why for me, people's opinions of me mean nothing to me, because I've only just trying to make my mother proud, and that's always been my mission, you know? And then, you know, we have friends in common, Jason, who I'll call and we'll share things that are happening and the pride of the things that we're doing. So there's a very small little group of people that I have in my life whose opinions I really do care for. And that pool, I know who to share what with. But for me, I'm just a 38-year-old boy looking for the approval of his mother. Will I ever find it? No, because she's dead.
You've always worn your heart on a slightly too tight sleeve, and that's been apparent all the time I've known you. But I think the whole world, certainly the South African world, saw an even more vulnerable side of you when your mum did pass away. And it was really hard, I think, for a lot of us to watch, because you were in an enormous amount of pain, but you also did use the space that you're in as a form of catharsis and a form of therapy. And that journey you went through, I think when you, I don't think you'll ever quite come to an end of it, but when you seem to get through the worst of it, I think the sense I had was I felt broken for you, but also it was wonderful seeing how you'd managed to kind of address it and progress through that and somehow deal with what was obviously the most difficult thing you've ever had to deal with.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Nicol, if I didn't do it on social media, I think I'd be in the Himalayas with a gigantic beard away from the industry. I think social media became my therapy. It became my, I found a community. A community that you will only know once you lose a parent. And if I didn't find, not a parent, but a mother, if I didn't find that community, I think I'd be in deep trouble. A friend of mine tried to commit suicide recently, and I spoke to him about it, and I was just like, I said to him, I would be angry at you, and I would be sad to lose you, but I wouldn't judge you, because I know the pain that you felt, and I've seen the darkness, I've been there. Not suicidal, but I understand when you get to a point when ending it would feel better, right? And I would have not understood it if I hadn't gone through what he went through. So for me, social media has personally saved my life of being able to get where I am now, because I don't know what I would have done, because I wouldn't have found that community. So I would post me crying, not for attention, because it was therapy for me. Then I would get 100 messages from people going, I lost my mother. This is what happened. This is what I did. This is what I did. And it helped me process it. But I realized that we don't talk enough about death and grief. And for me, I could see my friends, like Musi, would be like, I don't know what to do. Like, it's so hard to watch. And I said to him, you have both your parents. This one you can stay out of. You can support me, but there's nothing you can do. You won't understand this deep kind of wallow that we're in. But it's been an incredible process, and it's the year and a half has been the biggest growth of my life.
Tell me a bit about your mum. I never got to meet her, although I felt like I did know her, because even before she said goodbye, she was a regular point of reference. Always with, I think, something that my mum often gives, which is a combination of pride and a slight shake of the head. What has he done now? But possibly amplified a degree in your case. Tell me a bit about this wonderful woman.
You know, I don't have many regrets in life, but the regrets I have is I wish I loved her more, which is not possible. And I think I wish I had had kids while she was alive. The reason for those things is that she loved so hard that I wish I had given her another outlet to love me through. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been incredible to watch her love my kids.
Yeah, there is something about a grandmother or grandfather's love that is very unique.
She was a beast, man. She was such a beast. Like, she was just one hectic beast of a woman. What a force.
Was she surprised at what turned out, who her son became?
No, I was the only first boy, only boy, and the youngest. My name is Sivuile. It means we are happy. My nickname is Mavui. Mom is happy. Oh man, she from the day I was born, she knew I was going to be great. You know what I mean? Like, she had no, I had no choice. So I think people watch me sometimes. If you don't know me, I understand why you don't like me. I promise you, if you're listening to this.
Oh, I do know you, and I frequently don't like you. No, it's right. Many of us.
I understand. I make more money than most. I'm famous than most. And women love me even more than most. So, like, I understand why people don't like me. I get it. Like, sometimes I sometimes say, if I wasn't me, I wouldn't like me. You know what I mean? And that's because I just have this woman's breath in my sails who just continuously propels me to greatness. And I've learned to listen to her belief every single day. Has it been difficult? Yes. Fuck. You still have your mom, right? You still have your mom.
I do indeed. I'm very grateful for that.
It is a pain that is incomprehensible. I think death is easier. I think I had a motorbike accident. A woman cut me off on the road. And I remember for a split second, I didn't pull the brakes, just for a split second. And I was just like, it was like in slow motion. I was just like, thank God I get to see my mother. Just for a split second. And I didn't sway. And then afterwards, I was like, oh no, man, I still got to be famous and make people hate me. So I swerved.
And I think she would have been very angry with you if you'd done that. And rightfully so, as would I and many others, because she had and still does so much to be proud of. And as we set aside this self-doubt that you have and look back at some of the incredible things, when you go back to the start, the moment, if there is one, maybe it was an event, maybe it was a film, a performance, a particular month or two when this self-belief translated into the rest of the world joining you. Where was that breakthrough moment for you?
So after my trek, I worked in ski resorts. I worked in like California. I worked in like a lot of crazy bad jobs. I never forget. I had to clean toilets in Yosemite National Park in California. And every night I had to clean the women's toilets. And I used to have to empty out those women's sanitary pad dispensaries. Smells like hell. And then one day I had to break up poo because this woman had taken the biggest dump and it wouldn't flush. But every day, yes. True story.
This is glorious stuff.
But every day on my Nokia 3210, I'll get a reminder that said, you are great and you're destined for greatness every day.
Oh, this is from your mum.
No.
You'd sent it to yourself.
I put a reminder. It would come on two to three times, twice a day, morning and evening. And a lot of the times it would come on while I'm busy breaking up poo or taking up those sanitary pad dispensaries. But I always, even when I was making no money and I was struggling, I used to go and do karaoke competitions and win karaoke competitions, win like $100 and stuff like that and go around America and do stuff. And even there, in a lot of the environments that I were in, people were like, who are you? Something's different about you. And then I was like, I'm in America, and even they can see that something's special. And then I came home, and I was like, I stopped everything, and I just went head first back into the entertainment industry, because I started when I was 9 years old. And then there was one moment, I just got back from America. I was sitting out, driving outside the race course, the Kenilworth race course. And my mother looked back and she was like, she'll take another bond for me to study. And I was like, no, why? I'm great. I'll make this work. And then we started working and then I've never looked back. So I had a career from 9 years old. I traveled the world with a musical. Then I got to about 17. I got a bad acne, stopped the industry, concentrated on theater. Then had a bit of a gap from the industry because I had bad skin. And then I went back to the industry at about 19, 20. I lost my dad at 18. And then I literally remember my mother going, I'll take another bond to be able to let you study overseas. And I said to her, I will never let you do that. And then I was like, oh, okay, so you believe in me that much. Okay, let's go. And then, yeah. Never look back.
Which is probably worth more than 4 years of study or education, just knowing you had this force of nature at your back.
Oh, no. It's incomprehensible. I have a lot of sporting friends. And sport, and we have a lot of friends that are in common. Sportsmen and sportswomen have a trigger that no one will understand unless you have them as your friends. They have like this thing, this go, this thing that they have. I don't know how to explain it, but it's like a self-belief that is abnormal. And because a lot of sports friends of mine are sports, I get to understand it, and I'm always quite fascinated about it. But for me, the trigger was the mom belief. That's my goal, like, you know. And I've tried to use that in entertainment as well.
What about trigger of a different sort? It doesn't take too much, or it certainly seems not to take too much, to get angry, Siv, as we have a flick. Once again, our connection to you, for most people, is through Instagram. And it often revolves around some quite similar themes, be it domestic violence or people who've done stuff that's unspeakable or deplorable. And you climb in very quickly, and you are completely unafraid to do that.
I think a lot of people think that, because people don't realize, for me to go onto Instagram, there's been a process. So behind the scenes, there's stuff happening. I take a moment to go, okay, cool, what's happening here, what's happening, give it perspective. I have no time for injustice, no matter what it is. I hate injustice. I've always been the big guy growing up, so I never wanted to be the big guy standing on the small person. I hate injustice, and it comes from my mother as well. My mother was a big fighter of injustices, and I hate seeing anyone abuse their power. I don't mind if I see a man and a woman fighting and I jump in and I get a gunshot to my head or a gunshot to my chest. I don't mind. I don't mind dying for doing something good. And I think a lot of people think that's cliche or stupid, but I really don't. I don't mind paying the consequences for doing good.
So are you a person who gets into the occasional scrap?
See, things, I don't really ever get hit.
I know, I've tried several times.
Yeah, no.
Keep missing.
I don't get hit. I box. I've been boxing for years. I did jiu-jitsu for many years. I've never been hit. Have I been involved in altercations with people hitting women? I've hit many a man who are hitting women. Many a man. But cowards don't. Men who hit women do not hit men like me. I can't remember ever. I've never taken a punch to the face unless it's boxing. Have I kicked a lot of people's asses or hit women? Yeah, many.
So when we see, say, you're challenging somebody to a fight on Instagram, or I'll sort you out if I get the opportunity. Does that ever actually play out?
Look, cowards don't come to me. Things, like I say to people, I out a lot of people who women abusers on social media, and people are like, don't they take you to lawyers or attack you? Innocent people would attack me. Guilty people don't. And men who hit women don't come to me for men like me. No. But those who threaten me on social media and I threaten them back, if I go, oh, I'm here, let's go, they'll never come because they know I'm a bad man.
Look, I frequently looked for a fight with you, but I live in Johannesburg, so I've never been able to play
altitude,
that out.
Altitude.
the social warrior element of Sivengezi also comes through in the work you've done with your foundation, and you've taken on, in particular, you referenced it inadvertently with part of your work in America, but you've taken on a space which, let's be honest, it's not a cool space in terms of what people like to talk about. It's not a space many people feel comfortable talking about, but you've dealt with, I think the term that you often use is period poverty. And that's not something a lot of men get involved with talking about, let alone doing anything about.
Yeah, it's something I'm quite passionate about. I'm actually going to China next week. I'm going to 48 hours of crazy, crazy training for opening up my factory. I'm opening up a sanitary pad factory. I'm going to distribute one of the cheapest sanitary pads on the African continent. I have the second biggest distributor of sanitary pads in South Africa. The mission is to end period poverty. A lot of South Africans don't realize that young women miss 3 to 4 days of school per month because they cannot afford sanitary pads, which is a crazy injustice. And for me, I in the next 2 years, I want to be able to make sure there's no period poverty in South Africa. And I want to be the biggest, the largest, the cheapest sanitary pad on the African continent. And I want to be able to be known. I want my legacy to be the guy who ended period poverty. And it's not a woman's issue. It's a humanity issue. And at the moment, we're distributing about 500,000 sanitary pads a month. To about
500,000 a month.
Yeah, over 500,000 and to about 66,000 women. And no one comes close. The only person who distributes more sanitary pads is the government. Obviously, those are, if a sanitary pad costs 5 rand on their books it'll cost 15 rand and someone else takes the 10 rand. So if I could be given the funds, I could end period poverty in a few months. But they know that and they fear me. So, but we're coming. And so I'm going to be in Zaymin in China next week. 48 hours of training. Put my the machine on a few crates, and it's coming to South Africa. And I'm opening up my factory in the north here in South Africa. And we're going getting our hands dirty, literally, figuratively, blood in our hands.
Most people know you as movie star, television star, comedian, personality. I think your real legacy is taking shape at the moment, and that's fantastic.
Without a shadow of a doubt, I don't think I'll be known as an actor. I don't think I'll be known as... I think my legacy will be ending period poverty. That's the legacy. Like I say to Sia all the time, Sia Khaleesi, name drop. I say to Sia all the time, I say to him, you think your legacy will be rugby. I said, your legacy won't be rugby, brother. We'll forget about your World Cups. We'll forget about your World Cups. We will. Like there'll be another Lay's guy coming across, you know what I mean, in a couple of years, and the kids on the road won't recognize you, but they will know how many lives you've changed and the things you've changed. And I always say to Sia, the biggest things you're going to do will be after rugby.
Is President Khaleesi a serious vision for the future?
No. I don't think that's the way to go. I think as president, you can't change as much as you can on the ground. I think I can say and do things that Cyril can't say and do up there. And let's be truthfully honest, look at Biden. Do you see what Biden did today? Flipping, huh? But for me, presidents are flipping pawns. For me, I want to be on the ground. I want to be able to tell people to fuck off when I want to tell them to fuck off. I want to make the hard decisions that need to be made. And I look forward to changing more lives and getting involved and get my hands dirty.
Of course, you're able to do this because you do have a considerable platform. And it's when just over the last few years is really ramped up. There have been not just local productions, but some pretty big hitting international productions. You've done an enormous amount over the last few years, aside from the suspicion that you must be triplets at least to get all of this done. What's been the real highlight over the last few years? What's the one that's given you the most reward from a professional perspective?
I think working with Viola Davis is pretty amazing. That was quite great. We've become quite good friends, and John Boyega, we've got good friends working with them. I think sometimes when you have an extreme personality like mine, I think sometimes people look at your talent as a personality more than a talent. You get that, I'm sure. Like people are always like, Dan's got a loud mouth. He's quick witted, great personality. But a lot of times they wouldn't go talent because they think personality is talent when it's not the same thing.
And mostly with me, it's he's so good looking and so athletic and so young.
Yeah, I get that too. Didn't you tear your Achilles tendon playing paddle? That's what I thought.
Only took me 2.5 years to recover.
Yes. But I think for me, I think it's that. I think a part of me still has this like, I want to show you how talented I am, you know? And then everything is just a side hustle. I think everything is just a side hustle. For me, I just want to change lives. My friend Ashley Taylor said, the only thing that's bigger than Siv's ego is his heart. And the day I have a bigger ego than I have a heart is the day I'll reevaluate everything. But at the moment, I just want to be able to create as much work as possible, give as many opportunities as possible to people, and just enjoy my life.
And that brings me back to an enjoyment space that we shared together. And other than deafening me in that stadium in Tokyo and telling a large number of Japanese rugby fans that you were Sia Khaleesi's brother.
Jeremy did that. Jeremy Lewis did that.
And you did not deny it.
No.
So there's still a large chunk of people who've got photos with you mounted on homes and walls across Tokyo of Sia Khaleesi's brother, who they watched a World Cup rugby game
I wish
with.
I could say there were kids around Tokyo, my kids, but I got no love from the ladies in Tokyo. It's quite weird.
Well, they've got great taste, the Japanese. They're famous for that. We got to do quite a bit of cool stuff, including, I don't think we came close to death, but we did try some puffer fish sashimi together. And we had a lot of fun in those few days exploring Tokyo. And that's been something you've done a huge amount of, whether it was taking your time off as a kid to go to America and start exploring the world. That inherent sense of adventure runs rich through the Ngezi vein.
I just want to, I travel to meet myself. I really, it sounds so stupid, but I really do. I think every trip I learn something new about myself. I want to be uncomfortable. I want to be put in spaces that help me grow. And I want to be able to come back. You know, a trip has been amazing where you forget all the negativity on the trip. Because the worst thing about travel is the travel. I love travel, man. And I got that from my mother as well. My mother's always been quite a traveler. I just want to see the entire world. I want to walk into spaces and have to reintroduce myself every time I walk in. I love that. I love walking into spaces where no one knows me and I got a chance just to introduce myself from scratch. And yeah, man, I love that. I love adventure. I love that feeling of when you're about to do something crazy and you go, why am I? Yeah!
You see, this is where we differ categorically, because you will go somewhere to go bungee jumping and leap out of an aeroplane and abseil down a tower. And I will go to find a Michelin-starred restaurant, the best possible wine list, and possibly a rather nice spa. And I think our holidays might be slightly different.
Definitely. It's funny. I have a friend of mine called Megan. My friend Jeremy's wife, she's exactly the same. We get along like a house on fire, but her view of travel, and my best friend, Mpaki, is the very opposite of me. I can do 5-6 star, but I can do a backpack. I can jump on a backpacker, walk around, no one. I can do both of those. Michelin star restaurants do nothing for me. Restaurants that are named after a flipping tire company do absolutely jack shit for me. Okay, some tire company told you that this food is good. Let's trust them. But I just want to see the world, man. I want to see the world.
Look, I'm quite happy to go camping, for instance, as long as the tent has air conditioning, a butler, 600 count thread Egyptian linen, wine list, just the basics, really, that you need to
get by. The basics of life. For me, all I need is my credit card, and I need to be able to brush my teeth. And the odd sexy lady here and there, every couple of days here and there, to be able to teach me about the ways of the particular city that I'm in.
Hence the need for the credit card. As we look at the world that you've traveled, you did that terrific show with Yanez Vermeer and For a Stretch. Mm-hmm. You did some daft stuff, some really fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And you went to some unexpected locations. What was the one that surprised you the most?
Cuba was just a life-changing experience. I'll be trying to get back there. I really want to go back there. La Paz in Bolivia, one of the highest cities in the world. Just meeting so many people. I wish I could do it again. I look forward to be able to create travel content with the kind of experiences that I've had and the failures that I've had. I think you being an adult and not being able to celebrate the failures, you're failing. So I really look forward to be able to do more travel content and travel experiences around the world.
So if you had a ticket, right, we're going straight to the airport after we're done here, we're dashing off somewhere in the world, what's top of the list of I have not been to before?
I want to go to Bora Bora, one of the longest flights, the longest places to get to. I think it's like it could take us like 48 hours or something, Bora Bora.
I think closer to 3 days. I looked at it for my honeymoon.
3 days?
It would have, by the time you've got the connecting flights, it's closer to 3 than 2.
Mm. So Bora Bora, and I'm not an island guy, but I want to be able to go to the diving, experience the island. I'm not going to sit on the beach. I don't need a tan at all. And then I want to go back to Cuba and salsa in the evening lessons and then box in the morning. It's known for boxing and salsa, and to be able to see that incredible country once again.
Well, I've got no doubt there will be a huge amount of adventure still to come and a whole lot of travel. And possibly with somebody by your side, and I have to ask this on behalf of the millions of us who watch you on a daily basis, your friend, Mpaki, who is just a friend and only a friend and no more than a friend, despite the fact that you gaze lovingly into each other's eyes at every possible opportunity.
Bullshit.
I still think the two of you will get married sooner or later. But on the off chance that doesn't happen, is that the missing piece of the Civ puzzle? You mentioned earlier about how you would have loved your mum to have seen your kids. Is it just some kids? Do you see yourself settling down with a family at some point? Is that a possibility?
I don't believe in marriage. I think it looks like the worst thing in the world.
My wife is listening. It's a wonderful thing. It's the best thing you can ever do.
So I'm not, I definitely do not believe in marriage. At all. I think it's unnatural. I think it's not for everyone. And I think some people, you know, do it. But for me, I want to co-parent with someone. I don't have any ambition to call her my wife or my girlfriend. I want to be able to co-parent. My calling is to be a father. My calling is not to be a wife or a husband or whatever, to be in a relationship. I have no ambition for it. I think people force it. I can tell you right now, if you're listening to this in 5 to 10 years, I'll be a terrible husband. And I absolutely categorically could not imagine promising one woman that I will be with her for the rest of my life. I cannot. And you're a bigger man for me able to do that. And I love your wife. I've met her many times. We've had great times. But the ambition of marriage, never. And Pucky's my sister. We even have the same flipping clan name. Do I need woman in my life? I have different women in my life who fit a different category. I have Pucky, who's my sister, my confidant, my everything. And then I have people who, you know, cuddle partners, sexual partners, have gigantic women in the world. And I don't feel like I need one to fit into all those categories. Question, you're married. Do you have best girlfriends? Do you have a best girlfriend?
Do I have a best girlfriend? Yeah, I do. My wife. And I'll say that quite honestly. And not just because she's a lawyer and we have a 712-page agreement that governs things like this. Mm. But I genuinely, and I think you need those people where you're able to just unfurl everything that's going on those days where life is not quite as glowing as Instagram makes it feel.
No, agreed. I think talk to me in 20 years and I still think I'm quite a weird loner. Like I'm quite like I love to be alone and I don't want people in my space. And I'm quite like, I think people look at my online persona and they have this preconceived notion of who I am. And anyone who's ever traveled with me will be like, he doesn't say much unless he's on camera and he has to work. But a lot of times he's on his own little mission.
And there we have something in common because I remember going to an event I was doing in Scotland. I was in a car with two guests and I was thinking about the evening and I'd had a long flight and I'm one of those people who hates talking to other people on aeroplanes, for instance. I'm straight onto a movie and my wife, by the time the plane lands, will be going to dinner with 17 different people who she's met on the flight and I've got no interest in that whatsoever. And then got to the event and they come up to me afterwards and they didn't even realise I spoke English, let alone I was hosting the evening because sometimes you need, and I think when we do figure in a public space, there's often an interpretation that doesn't always equate to who we are on a day-to-day basis.
No, I'm traveling to China with my business partner and we did the World Cup together with a big group and I can remember him going, hey, I said, I'm just going for a walk. And he was like, should I come with you? Or you want to do this alone? I said, no, I'll do it alone. And I could hear him saying to everyone, I know he seems social, but he isn't. And he's gotten to know that. He went from inviting me to every single braai, to inviting me to the special occasions. He knows I won't miss a kid's birthday, his wife's birthday, his birthday. He knows I won't miss special events. But randomly want me to come watch rugby? No, bruh. No.
The one moment I think that is still left, and it is going to be a very, 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 very long way off, both because you're very young and you're also almost as fit and athletic as I am. That's when
I'm genetically perfect.
That's when you get to say hello to your mum once again. Mm. When you do, what's the first thing you'd say to her? What's the first thing you'd like to be able to tell her many, many years down the road?
I'll first be upset at her for not teaching me how to live without her. I think that's a lesson that I wish she had taught
me. Ever so slightly unfair, but yeah,
I wish she had taught me that. And then I wish, then hug her and then just be able to go like, I wish she'd met my kids. Because I don't believe in heaven. So like, all of that cliche nonsense, but like, I wish she'd been able to be here and meet her, because I don't want a boy. And then like, just like, because now it's weird, like, this is going to sound so dark, but every time I see someone on social media who's lost a mother, there's a piece of me that goes, oh, so now you know how I feel. I'm not celebrating, but I'm just like, there's one more person to join this club.
There's a kinship to it.
Yeah, there's like a club thing, and it's like weird. It's like a, there's a thing to it. It's so weird, man. People don't understand it, but like, after this year and a bit, I've made some incredible friends through loss. And yeah, but then we'll laugh about how great I am.
We've had some really fascinating conversations on the course of this show with people like Rake Nirtling discussing the loss of his sister, Ryan O'Connor, the loss of his child. And it's something that society often has us shy away from a little. The open expression, especially men, of grief is kind of, oh, why are you doing that? That's uncomfortable. And I think as we wrap up, because I need to get to gym and you need to... probably do likewise, really, is
to... Or look in the mirror.
Again.
No, but Rake's death hurt me as well, because I know how quiet Rake is. I know how into him, like, internal he is.
Yeah.
So watching that for me was difficult. I reached out and we had a little bit of a conversation, but that was difficult to watch because, like, those are the kind of people who you want to check on the most.
Yeah. But also these are the conversations that we need to have more of, and I think that's something you've been... really good at in between all the bombast and the cool stuff and the, hey, look at me, I'm the international superstar, which you do very well, is having conversations that people aren't always comfortable doing. And I know you're not always comfortable having them, but you sense that you need to have them and that they help you and they help others. And I think it's those other people. And it's something you will never actually know the full extent of, that there is somebody out there, and that almost certainly far more than just one, who's listened to what you had to say at some point and gone, you know what, I'm going to keep on going. I'm going to take another day and I'm going to give it a go. And you won't know. You'll have a list of who those people are. But I think you can be absolutely certain that the impact you've had is more than just lighting up some award-winning movies and making great television.
I was at Loftus last week. And I think people have a preconceived notion of what Loftus looks like or how hard it is. But I took so many pictures and so many conversations with perfect strangers. Afrikaans, two-tone shirt types, just going, I watch your content. Thank you. And they look at me and they're like, you know what I mean. Like, even now it makes me feel a bit like, not emotional, but like it gets me because like, you know, you've been taught a certain kind of narrative about those kind of people. But last week was eye-opening, man. Loftus, just like, they would just come to me to take a picture and it's like, oh, thank you for that thing you said. And none of them are saying, it's great to watch your film. No, I don't really take pictures anymore. The content, when I take content, pictures from people, with people, it's usually not about them saying, I loved you in this. It's usually, I love what you said. I love your content and I love what you stand for. And for me, that's invaluable.
And probably above all, I love the way you made me feel. Which is something you do quite effortlessly and with great impact. Mr. Ngezi, I won't say thank you for the slight deafness in one ear, which endures 5 years later, but also thank you for the friendship and thank you for everything you do, because you do a huge amount for a lot of people. It inspires us on a daily basis. And I just hope fervently, and I shall do my best to ensure this continues, that I do stay on the right side of Sir Ngezi, because that's a very good place to be.
But I just want to end off by saying you do a lot of good, but you're very silent about it. You're one of those people that sends money to things and you say, don't tell anyone, which is it's
normally because it's a stolen credit card. Well, I'm trying to mask that.
Well, you do very good, and we see what you do consistently doing your thing, so it's always a pleasure to watch, man.
Sir Ngezi, thank you.
Sure, man.
You're listening to the Dan Nichols Show.